Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2585. That's 2585. Tonight we're going to have a special guest. Her name is Annie Margus, I believe. She'll correct me if that's the wrong pronunciation of her name. And she is from Long Beach, California. She grew up in a large Catholic family, and most of her siblings, well, they all fell to a variety of types of abuses. I don't want to read her bio. I want her to tell her story. And so, but that's basically what it's going to be about, and it's probably going to be a very powerful story. But before we get started, okay, I see that people are calling in. I'm happy about that. I do want to read a little bit about NASCA and talk a little bit about NASCA, okay? We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two different ways we do this. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic. We know that it's worldwide. It's a worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, my name is Carol Levine. I am Vice President of NASCA. And tonight I'll be running the show, but I have a lot of good people here, good key people, and that makes me happy. The telephone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And if you'd like to be a part of the show, might be on a panel or you just want to listen in, that's fine. We're an educational type of program or show, and we always hope that people walk away with a little bit more knowledge as before they even came to the show. That's one of our primary concerns and interests at NASCA. So what I'm going to do now is we have a nice panel, and I'll bring them on accordingly. And what we do is we let the person, our guest, Annie Margus, from Long Beach, start telling her story. And then, I don't know, two or three times I'll stop and the panel will respond. They might ask a question or make a comment. So, if you want to be a part of this show, there are a few more slots left where people can call in. I will give out the telephone number again, and that is 646-595-2118. Okay, now let me see where that guest is. Here she is. I'm going to bring her on right now. Annie from California.
Yes, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I couldn't be better. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm hanging it, maybe hanging out a little bit. I don't know. How do you pronounce your last name?
Margus, like a J.
Oh, Margus. Okay, there we go. I wasn't too far off. But anyway, welcome to the show. And tonight is your night, and you're going to be telling your story. And, you know, we always are so thankful when people come on and tell their stories. There are going to be a lot of people listening. A lot of people listen through their computers as well. and then later on in the archives, and then we have our panel. So by telling your story, you're helping a lot of people, because there are a lot of people who will be able to identify with you and so forth. And this is one way of bringing forth awareness to society, to public, to people in general, is by people telling their stories. So thank you so much for being on the show. Do you feel ready to tell your story now?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead. Start in.
Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Annie Margis, and I'm here to share with you my journey healing from childhood incest. And my journey has left me whole and happy and able to share with you today. And I'm just really glad about that. There is hope. There is healing. The statistics say that 90% of sexual assault is committed by people the child knows. And often that's parents and it's other family members. And that's incest. It's a lot of childhood incest going on in homes that no one is talking about. Well, I'm a victim of one of those homes. But I'll start at the beginning. I was born. And when I was born, my mother had pneumonia. So the nuns put my bassinet in the hallway so I wouldn't wake her up with my crying. And in the hallway, I caught a staph infection and got boils all over my body. And I took those boils home and I gave them to all of my brothers and sisters and my parents and my grandparents. So everybody hated me. And they didn't want to hold me either because I had boils on me. And so it wasn't a really auspicious start, but eventually I won them over, and I wasn't always hated, although I've always been known as the black sheep. So fast forward, I'm 3 years old, and I'm sitting on a chair, and my feet don't touch the ground yet, and my father sexually assaults me. And this happened many times. In many different ways, different places. How many years? I don't know, but it was years. And when I was 10, I had what they used to call a nervous breakdown. I had to quit the fifth grade. I kept getting strep throat over and over and over again, and I became delusional. Part of my delusion was that I believed every breath I took and every cell of my being was a sin against my father. Every thought in my head was a sin against my father. It wasn't rational. But if I touched the doorknob, sins got on my hand, and I had to wash them off. This was my delusion. And I compulsively washed my hands over and over until the skin came off. My mother told the doctor I had dry skin. In my delusion, I believed I was the greatest sinner who had ever lived. I tried to count up my sins and take them to the Catholic confessional for forgiveness. And I told the priest, I said, you know, I disobeyed my father a million billion trillion times. Because in my mind, that was true. I believed that. And the priest said to me, no, you're not such a bad little girl. Go home and do what your father tells you. The second commandment, honor thy father and mother. Mm-hmm. And so that was it. I was damned to hell because I was told to do what my father said. I would be damned if I did it and damned if I didn't. And so I was going to hell. There was no question. Getting out of this delusional insanity was really an effort of self-will. When the priest made me realize that I was damned no matter what I did, I said, so what? So what? I don't care anymore. I'm not even going to try. I'm not going to try washing the sins off of me anymore. I'm just going to live my life knowing I'm going to hell at the end of it. And so that's what I did. I went back to school, and the weird thing was the memory got suppressed. I don't recall ever knowing when I was in junior high and high school that I had been abused. It wasn't in my conscious memory. And it didn't come back to my conscious memory until I was in my 40s. Mm-hmm. But that's a long time from now. Right now, I'm turning 18 years old, and I immediately get pregnant by my boyfriend. And it wasn't a consensual event. And this commonly happens to childhood abuse, sexual abuse victims. They get pregnant. Twice as likely, there's a statistic for us, they're twice as likely to become pregnant than children who were not sexually abused. So here I am pregnant. I'm in the hallway of the medical center and because they gave free pregnancy tests. And this young doctor with dark hair came up to me and he said, okay, you're pregnant. Do you want an abortion? 1974, abortion was legal. So he gave me a choice. I could put this pregnancy behind me, go on, go to college, become a writer, have a life. That moment is etched in my memory like stone. It was a moment of horror and of peace. The decision I would make, my future rested on it. Mm-hmm. I was Catholic. I was a devout Catholic, firm believer, and I couldn't do an abortion. I knew that if I did it, I would just kill myself out of guilt and never be a writer at all. So I decided I'd carry the pregnancy through to birth and give the baby up for adoption. And that is what I did. But I want you to know that when I did this, I went into the deepest, darkest, saddest depression that I couldn't even see out of, like a really deep, dark hole. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to do this. Everywhere I looked, I would see a child. And I would think, is that my child? Is that my child? And I was very obsessive. I had OCD anyway, and I was obsessive about looking at children and wondering if they were mine. And I was really going nuts. And I knew that I was not going to survive unless I went and got that child back and raised it. And so that is what I did. I was a single mom of a lovely child when I was 18.
No, let's stop there. That's very, very unfortunate, you know. A lot of times kids do get pregnant out on the street or, you know, if they run away or even if they don't run away and they come from dysfunctional homes. And, yes, you're quite right. The chances of children, you know, in situations like that getting pregnant are very high, actually. And so I'm so sorry that happened to you. In fact, I'm sorry that the whole thing happened to you. It was never your fault. And, of course, today you know that, right? You didn't know that at the time. And maybe at the time you didn't even think about it, you know. People react funny to different situations. I felt dirty, okay? So I would scrub my skin, too. So I'm understanding what you're saying because I wanted to get the dirt off, all right? And because I felt like it was dirty. And other kids, they just figure, well, this is the way it is. This is the way of life, and I'm just going to have to live with it and things like that. So you never know how a child is going to react to behavior. You did mention, though, I see in your bio that you had sheer terror. It's written here, sheer terror. I mean, you were scared to death of how you were being treated. They never made you feel protected, your parents. And like you said, you were the black sheep. You were the one that was always singled out. And that's a shame, okay? And what that's very abusive to children because a child who's singled out, and they know who they are, okay? Kids know when they're singled out. They always then form all different types of problems, like with low self-esteem, and maybe they become very inward children, or the opposite side of the coin, where they become very angry children. How were you with friends? Were you able to have friends in school? How did you do in school?
I was a perfectionist and got straight A's in school. I didn't have a lot of friends. And the ones I did have, at least my best friend, she was very abusive to me. I've had her as a best friend since grammar school. And I know now, looking back, she was an abusive person, and that's who I was with because I was abused at home. So it was normal to be with somebody who was verbally abusing me and saying mean things about me.
Mm-hmm. That's a shame, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so often we fall into behaviors like that, you know, behavior patterns. Because after all, mommy and daddy are supposed to nurture us, aren't they? Mommy and daddy mm-hmm. are supposed to guide us. Mommy and daddy are supposed to love us. And even if you have a favorite child, many people do, you're not supposed to show it. You're just simply not. You were one of five. Is that what you were? Or was it four? Which was it?
Six. I was number four.
Six.
Out of six. Yeah.
Oh, six. Okay. All right. All right, well, let's go to the panel. I want them to introduce themselves, and maybe they have a question or a comment to make so far. So let's go to Pamela. Her mic is open. Go ahead, Pamela.
Hi, welcome, Annie. How are you doing?
Great, thanks.
Yeah, you're doing a great job telling your story. You must have told it before.
I have, thank you.
Okay, well... I have read some of your bio. I'm the associate producer with NASCA. I'm also the associate producer. I'm also the Alabama ambassador. And, you know, I try to help people, you know to how to tell their stories and things. And I have spoken with you before. And a couple of things that stood out to me was that you were one in six, three boys, three girls, and you said one boy was the most favored, and the rest of you were not favored at all. Mostly the girls weren't to the mother. The mother had no worth for her girls. They saw no worth in them. And it said your mother was very verbally abusive and harsh with you. When you got pregnant, had your baby, what did your mother think? Did you have any connection with your mother at that time?
Do you know she never mentioned it to me once? I was obviously pregnant. She never mentioned it to me once. She just pretended like it wasn't there. It was difficult,
okay.
I'll tell you.
Did she ever have a relationship with her grandson?
Yeah, she did. Yeah. Yeah, she was very fond of him. Yeah.
All right. So... yeah, and I wanted to say something about your STD, not STD, your did you say you had strep throat?
Yes, over and over.
Me too, and my mother's second husband used to make me do oral sex with him. I would get ritualistic strep throat, and he'd have to take me in to get my big penicillin shot, and then I'd always get nauseated, so he'd take me to he'd let me go to the little gift shop there and pick out a gift. Oh, how nice he was. But, you know, that's just part of my, and part of yours, it sounds like, memory that, you know, you wouldn't have had to go through that, which strep throat is horrible.
It is.
Well, the whole thing here is horrible. Go ahead.
Yeah. I had strep throat for years, and finally I aged out of it somehow and didn't have it anymore.
Well,
thank you for that, Pamela.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah,
it's funny because it's not really funny, okay? But it's well known, okay, because of the abuses that we have. Now, you're speaking about oral sex, and you also have other things in your family going on. But when children are sexually abused, they tend to have a lot more maladies, more you know, physical health problems than those children who haven't been abused, okay?
Absolutely.
And, yeah. And by the way, Pamela's also a nurse, so there you go. But the point is that we can have more even internal problems, like heart problems. I have heart problems now. I didn't know I had them, but I found out a couple of years ago that I do. And, you know, but other things that we can have. We can have a lot of stomach problems. Child abuse affects the child spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally, okay? Those different ways, they affect children. And when you said that you went to the priest, okay, of course the priest didn't quite understand what was going on because you sort of like turned things around when you were, you know, talking to the priest. He didn't understand that the abuse was coming from your father. But on the other hand, you know, if you don't have anyone to talk to, did you tell anyone what was going on? Did you share what was going on with anyone?
No.
No, you didn't.
Just that time I went to the priest.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go down to Annie from California because her mic is open also. And Annie, how are you doing? I'm glad you're here.
I'm doing well,
she's
thank
guest.
You.
She's
That's
guest,
good.
Carol.
Huh? Yeah, she's a guest.
She's the
I'm sorry. Jeez, that's right. Her name is, oh, yeah, Annie. You're right. Let's go down to Peter. Peter from Ontario, open up his mic. Okay. I didn't get much sleep last night. You can tell. Go ahead. Peter from Ontario, from Canada. Do you have a question or a comment you want to make about what you've heard so far?
My heart goes out to her. I've been a guest on this Talkback Radio before, and as I was once a little boy demised by a family member, a cousin, and you'd be that child to try to, you know, wonder if, you know, if it's right or wrong. A child doesn't know, and so my heart goes out to you. I'm really happy that you followed your heart and going along on this journey. I'm still working on my journey, but I feel for you. I really do, and I'll just keep listening in a little more and see what can wrap around in my brain and see if I can. I'm trying to write down notes at the moment, but haven't quite put a finger on questions at the moment, but I'll keep listening.
Okay, that's good. Thank you, Peter. We're always glad that you're on, too, because you have a lot to say. And, you know, we're all in different parts of our healing journey, each and every one of us, you know. Bill and I have been, I suppose, at the end of our healing journey the most, you know. We're right there. And I'm not going to get any better, folks. Here I am. This is the way I am. And I like to think that, if I were to give a percentage to it, I think I'm 90% healed. But it took a long time to get there, okay? Let me bring on Bill. He's right here right now. And I'm going to bring
his
mic on.
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi, guys. It's nice to be here tonight. I'm doing my work for the upcoming week in the background, but I've been listening very carefully. You know, the nervous breakdown that you mentioned you had, I definitely had those too. I had a couple of them. In fact, I may have more than a couple, but I know I had at least two in the process of being abused early on, which for me happened at a camp, a summer camp, and I wasn't near my family. But I must have displayed behavior that alerted the nurse or the nursing people to take me down to the cabin that was the medical cabin. And I remember staying there two years in a row, about 5 days at a time. And they, you know, until I calmed down enough, and they gave me some medications and stuff. But I don't know if that was ever reported to anybody else. But, I mean, the trauma that I had already started to exhibit was because there was a guy there who was abusing me. And I didn't know what it was. I didn't know how to get away. I didn't know I was supposed to talk and so forth. So I think this is pretty common. And, you know, as far as the priest, being a Catholic, which I am, is concerned, you know, you go to the priest and you as a child, especially in that era, I guess still today, you assume that the priests are like beyond reproach. They are the top of the pyramid of Catholicism in each parish, and you're taught to talk about honor your mother and father. Well, this is the father of a different kind, and you honor him even more almost. You know what I mean, Annie? So I identified with a bunch of stuff you talked about, and I really appreciate you being here tonight. Thank you so much.
Okay. Yeah, that's good, Bill. Thank you for that. You know, you made a comment that you didn't realize, okay, that I'm Catholic too. We have a lot of Catholics on this show tonight. But anyway, you said you didn't realize that, you know, like you were repressing things, okay, dissociating, whatever way you want to put it. And you didn't realize that you were really being abused until the age of 40. Why don't you tell us about that? That's not uncommon, by the way. But go ahead, because there's people out there that don't know about that. Maybe you can help them out just by what you're going to say. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I lived my life in a very sheltered and terrified way. I was afraid of people and afraid of social situations, and I had a lot of symptoms of the childhood incest, but I didn't know about it until my sister called and started to talk about it. And then it all came back. Not everything, but most of my memories came back right away. And then over time, a few more arrived. But, I lived my whole life not knowing. And I remember one time, and this sticks in my mind because I was confused and kind of shocked, One of my brothers came over and said something about, can you believe what they did to us? And I was like 22. And I said, what do you mean? I didn't know what he meant.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't explain it either. But I was so shocked by that I remember it still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, did he abuse others, or was it just yourself? You know, and I don't mean just. I mean, was it you were his target or what?
It was others as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Usually there are, but once in a great while, someone will come on and say no, that they were the only one that was being, you know, sexually abused. And incest is such a horrific subject. You know, so many times people don't want to speak about incest. Well, it's there. It's here. It's present, you know, and it's been going on for the beginning of time, you know. Child abuse itself has been going on from the beginning of time, and we're never going to stop it, okay? I don't care how many books we write, how many songs we sing, you know, whatever it is, how many artists we have out there, they're all very, very helpful. And I wrote a book myself, and Pamela's written a book, and there's so many of us have written books. And I know that you've written a book, which we'll get to in a little while. But the truth of the matter is there's so many pedophiles out there and slash sex offenders, meaning that either they want the children who are prepubescent or they want the children who are prepubescent, they turn into teenagers, and, you know, the abuse continues. The stories are never the same, but they're similar. Okay, but there's all different kinds of categories. When do you think was the last time that your father stopped abusing you?
You know, up till the day he died, he was he spoke to me in a sexual manner. On his deathbed, he did, and so he never really quit. I didn't see a whole lot of him all my life, but I did see him. He moved far away. Well, not far, mm-hmm. like 12-hour drive. So I didn't see mm-hmm. a lot of him. But I hated him. And I didn't really know why I hated him, because I had repressed it. But I sure hated him viciously.
Mm-hmm. And with your mother, it says that she was verbally abusive and harsh with you. Do you think that she knew what he was doing with you, and because of that, that might be one reason why she was so harsh with you?
I do believe that, because she said some things. I have some childhood memories of things that she said, which make me believe that she knew.
And before she died, like 6 months before she died, she asked me, she said, did your dad ever do anything wrong to you? And I said, no, because I'm a really big chicken. And I couldn't talk to my mother about it. Could not. Not even to bring her closure at the end of her life. I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I said, no.
That happens a lot, you know, with parents. You know, when parents are the abusers, many times you can't form, you know, that mother-daughter, you know, relationship, that bonding. It doesn't exist. And many times, too, with the father. In your case, you had a father who was sexually abusing you, and evidently others, too. And your mother was just plain a harsh person who couldn't maybe... I don't think she was in denial of it. I agree with you. But she wasn't going to talk about it until her, you know, the day she died almost. So
yeah.
That's unfortunate. You know, there's no true closure there. And that's hard. That must be hard on you. Okay, your boyfriend raped you at 18 and you became pregnant. And you gave up your baby for adoption, but deep darkness and depression made you go back for your son. That's unusual, I think. I could be off on this, but usually when you you know, have your baby up for adoption, I don't know if you can, maybe they give you a little bit of time to change your mind, but you know, after a while you can't. Now, I can understand why you would be looking at children, you know, and thinking, is that my child? Is that my son? Or is that my daughter? Or whatever. Because that would be, I would never be able to do that. And yet I understand why people do it. But it must be a very hard thing to live with also. So you have a lot of things in your life that, you know, even though you repressed a lot of your years and you're a straight-A student, and so you're very, you know, successful that way. A lot of times people do become perfectionists who have been sexually abused. They can be perfectionists, or the flip side of the coin that I like to say, they can become the opposite. You know, and we don't have too many on the show that are perfectionists, you know, that turn to that. But that's also, too, a sign of child abuse, okay, and with the OCD. But you were able to get over your own OCD in a sense because you said that when the priest – you know, made you go home and just continue doing, or, you know, being daddy's little girl or whatever, talking to him, being with him, and do it as he says, you got, that ended your OCD with your hand washing. You decided,
yes.
You know, well, that didn't work, so I might as well, you know, get out of that. So that was, I'm glad you got out of the OCD. So school was a refuge to you. Because you were not going to be abused. You hoped you weren't going to be abused at school. Today we know better that children do get abused at school as well, and many other things, the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts. I mean, anything that has to do with children, the abuse does go on, and that's unfortunate. So you have one good friend, but she abused you in the sense that she made fun of you and called you names, all these things that you said, unfortunately, that you were used to. What are you doing today? Are you able to be in a relationship? Or do you have friends today? You said you became inward.
Yes, I do have friends today. When I began working on the knowledge of the incest, it was after I retired from teaching, and I went to programs for people who survived childhood incest, and I met other people like me, and I heard their stories, and they made me so mad. I was so mad at those perpetrators who hurt these people that I finally became mad at my dad and not at myself, and I was finally able to forgive myself. But those people became friends, and I was able to have them to come over to my house, and I even had a Thanksgiving party for the small meeting group that I went to every week. And today I do have a couple friends. I'm not real social, but I do have a few friends, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you don't need a whole bunch of friends. If you, they say, of course, they've been saying this for years. If you have one good friend, you're rich. You know, that's what they say.
Yeah.
And but the fact that you're able to have, you know, you're able to be social today, and you do have a few friends, that shows that there's growth there. But one thing I want to question you about, and I always wonder about this when people say this. You said you were able to forgive yourself. Okay. What were you forgiving yourself for? The feelings that you had towards your parents, or what?
No, no, because I thought those feelings were justified. There's so much shame surrounding it that I forgave myself for being a part of it, as if I had had any choice, which I didn't. But I still felt shame. And eventually I was able to say, no, this is not my shame. Not my shame. I don't feel it anymore.
That's right. That's exactly right. It's never our fault, okay? We have people that come on the show, and you have to believe that, okay, Annie? You have to believe that it was never your fault. We have people that come on the show at times, and they're doing flip-flops with that because God made our body in a such a way that, you know, at times we respond to sexual stimuli, which is what the body is made to do. And so they would feel shame because a part of them enjoyed it and another part of them didn't enjoy it. And I'm sure that was very confusing, especially to a child, you know, who can't reason, well, this is what the body does, you know, if it's stimulated, you know. So I just wanted to ask you about the shame because, my God, it certainly was never, never your fault. And I'm sure you didn't, you know, add to it. I remember for myself that I would always be like a statue. I always knew it was wrong and made me mad, and I couldn't do anything about it. Mine started at the age of 6 with the sexual abuse until 17 was the last time I was finally raped, and that was, you know, by a stranger because I had it in the family and outside of the family. You were never sexually abused outside of your family?
I'd have to say that during my dating years, I had some encounters that weren't real healthy. So, yeah. Scary.
Well, that happens, you know. That happens. And we're trying to teach the youth today, you know, like in schools, some schools that do, you know, address issues like this. And there aren't many, believe me. About date rapes and stuff like that, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, boundaries. Many children who are sexually abused, whether it be inside the house, outside the house, or both, they become very promiscuous. I know I certainly did. I was very promiscuous. And what we're actually doing is looking for love, you know. I mean, that song, Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places, you know. You know, that's it. That's what we used to do, you know. And it's because of the abuse. We didn't have boundaries. Right. We weren't told what to do, what not to do, you know.
Carol?
So, yes.
It's Pamela.
Yeah.
Can I say something here?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay.
I was going to go to the panel. Go ahead. So you're number one.
Oh,
go ahead.
Okay. Didn't you say that you were assaulted by your boyfriend, and that's when you got pregnant, Annie?
Yes.
Okay. So you were abused outside of your family then. So did you have a daughter?
Bad.
I was wondering also. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Did you ever marry that boy? Or
did
you know about it?
Yeah. I did marry that man, mostly because I was dating and stuff, and nobody wanted to be with a woman who had a child. No, it just, they just didn't. And so, and I was too scared after college. I was really, really scared. And so he moved in with me, and then we lived together for, I think, 13 years. And I had another child with him. So I have two sons with him. And
so
then I divorced. We're divorced.
That took forgiveness to marry him, right? I mean, if you hadn't forgiven him, we probably wouldn't have married him, huh?
Yeah, I did. I forgave him of so many things over the years. And it was like I just expected to be treated badly, and so I was.
Yeah.
So how did he treat you?
Well, he was kind of a sex addict, and he brought me home diseases. That's how he treated me. Ugh. And I kept forgiving him. I just kept forgiving him. And then finally, when I had the second child, he realized that that was going to be a lot of work. Well, I'm putting thoughts in his head. Anyway, he's gone. He left.
And so did he ever make you watch porn or anything like that?
Yes.
Or what, did he watch porn?
Yes.
I bet that turned you off.
Yes. It was all very creepy. But like I said, I didn't see that I had any choice. I sort of felt like I was fated to be with him because I had that child.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You felt kind of for the child that you had to have the dad there, right, for the child.
Right. Exactly.
Because most women don't want their children being raised without a dad because it does affect them adversely. So, you know, but, you know, if it's going to affect you adversely and the child, and what, did he ever grow affectionate towards the child?
You know, he never did. He with the first child he was, but the second child, no, they're estranged. They never really bonded much. Sad.
That's a shame. That's a shame.
Yeah. Yes, it is a shame. So let me ask you, with these two children that you have, now you have one that's favored maybe and one that's not by him, and that's not a good place to be. But, you know, you were so abused as a kid, and you've said it I don't know how many times. I've just been sitting here listening to you and Pamela. It's more like you kept forgiving him because of his conduct. Because after all, that's what you were used to. You see, that's what so many people get into. They forgive them because, let me turn my other phone off. Many people forgive them because that's what they were used to. And this is why so often we choose bad partners, is because we're still looking, you know, for the love from father, you know, that we didn't get. So then we choose bad partners. Did this guy, did he beat you up?
No, it was verbal abuse, and then he ran around all the time. And he was verbally abusive to the kids, too, which really broke my heart. I couldn't stand to see that.
Does he see the kids anymore today? Does he see them? Do they want to see him?
The younger one does not talk to him, and the older one, I think they have a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever talk to him, so.
Right. No, I don't blame you. I wouldn't want to talk to him either. Okay. Let's go down to Peter from Ontario and see if he has a question or a comment that he'd like to make. Let me open up his mic and get him back on. There you go, Peter. Now, you've heard quite a bit more. Is there something that you'd like to make a comment about?
I guess one question I want to ask is that now I'm on that bit of a struggle in forgiving my parents and for not believing me and not being there for me when I was sexually abused and molested by my cousin. But the question I have with, I mean, I don't have children, so I can't understand. I can't say I understand how you're probably feeling, but so what, your children don't have any contact with this individual whatsoever? Like, do they have any idea are they at that age to know what happened to you?
Well, that's an interesting question. As I said, I'm a big chicken, and I couldn't talk to my mom. I couldn't talk to my children either. And I still don't talk directly about it. But my older son took on the publishing of my novel. He read it. That's how I told him. He read the book. And he read it, and he took it on. And it was published in October. And I couldn't have done it without him. It was pretty amazing. But we never talked about incest. We just talked about the book. And the other son, we've never talked about it, although he knows what I'm doing. You know, he knows I've got the book and I'm speaking and stuff like that. But he doesn't talk about it.
And I might have missed it by accident. But you're the only child? Or you have siblings?
Yes, there are six of us.
And were they at all in the situation of they were?
I think so. I have had members of my family discuss it with me, and that makes me know that they were abused too. And then I have heard things from other people about other siblings. So, yeah, I think he got us all.
And, you know, if I also may, I mean, I've been in that situation where as years went on, now I'm a 30-year long-time survivor living with HIV, and I endured this infection from my cousin, who I found out 2 years later after my diagnosis that he was fully blown with the AIDS virus. And it's funny, sorry, not funny, it's incredible to know that I have one sibling and she's 3 years younger than me. And I found it very odd that my mother would say to me the one time I spoke to her on the phone, and she told me that you know, things were going well for with your sister. She's finally, for the first time in so many years, that she's got herself a boyfriend. And I said, "Oh, good for her." And then my mother decided to bring up and say, "But I'm very intrigued that the kind of stuff that you did to your sister at such a young age." And when your siblings realize and understand that thing has happened to them, now what, you know, I've said this to the main ladies that's in charge of this organization, and you know, I said to them that you know, it's crazy that no truth is coming out. And the truth is coming out on one side, but it's not coming out onto the other side. Now, my sister was abused and molested by the same abuser. What happened to her behind closed doors, I had no idea. She doesn't know what happened to me. But when you're forced upon, and then you're all of a sudden you're getting labeled as a pedophile because what you did. Now, now that, you know, with Carol and Pamela I've had many people try to talk me into it, but it's not my fault that I was forced upon by my abuser to do stuff to my sister that I did not know. But when you start hearing the truth that came from another, from my parent, my mother, who we don't speak to one another because I'm nothing but a liar and I make stories up to get other people in trouble. But I had my grandparents, and you're talking about being sheltered. I was sheltered by my grandparents because they didn't want me out of their sight. They were doing everything they could is to protect me. Now, my grandmother knew that there was something that was going on when we were kids, but she needed that proof. She needed evidence to actually do something about it. And that's why I was asking you, you know, if your siblings, you know, was there any truth? Was there any lies about it? Like, Johnny, you're making this up, or you're just saying that to get somebody into trouble. Is that how it was with your siblings or your parents?
No, I never discussed it with my parents, but with my siblings, I don't even know if they've read my book. You know, the family was so, let's not talk about everything, that I believe we continue that way. One family member read it, and she said, wow, that was, you know, so accurate. But no one else has said that they read it. So, and I don't discuss it with them. You know, I figured they'd bring it up if they wanted to talk about it. But it's all on Facebook, and they're on Facebook with me, so they know what I'm doing.
Yeah, my parents, my mother won't have anything to do with me. My sister won't have anything to do with me because I'm nothing but a liar. And the fact because I'm HIV positive, they don't want to have anything to do with me because it's a gay disease, so I sleep around with males. And in this case, mm-hmm. which was my cousin. But, you know, when mm-hmm. I find out 2 years later that he is full-blown with the AIDS virus. Now, we had the AIDS pandemic in Australia back in the 70s and 80s, so people were dropping off like flies. But it was sort of like the dinner bell was ringing. And, you know, and it still chokes me, where was my father, where was my mother, but they didn't want to believe me. I, you know, you said, Carol, what was your name again, ma'am?
Her name is Annie.
Annie. Mm-hmm. You know, it came, my father left pornography videos and magazines, you know, it was sort of like opened there, you know. It was like, it's there. I had to read it. If I didn't read it, then I'm not a man. I'm not a boy, you know. You know, you got to be a man to read or watch stuff like that. So you and I are pretty much on that same, close to that same, but under the same boat, but not as quite, because you got more siblings and you got children. So, I don't know what more other questions, but
That's fine, though. That's fine what you said, Peter. You see, what you're showing is that we're survivors, okay? We're survivors of horrific abuse. And as far as your parents are concerned, we can't choose our parents, okay? We can't.
Oh, no, we can't. And you know, my father was the only child with my grandparents, and my mother, she came from a family with two or three other siblings. So, you know, and the last time I spoke to my grandmother was probably about a month before she passed away, when I was living in Kitchener, Ontario, and mm-hmm. I asked my grandmother this one question, and I said to her, because my father used to be in the Cubs Club in Newcastle. Cubs is the opposite of the Scouts Club. And I asked my grandmother, I said, do you know, or would there have been any chance why my father is the way he is, of the verbal abuse, the physical, and the mentality? I said, do you know if he was hurt or sexually molested by the leaders of the club that he was involved with? My grandmother said that was a very interesting question that I asked her, but she said it's just something that your father wouldn't have brought up. Because why? And I've said this before, I think I said this couple of weeks ago, Carol and Pamela, is that we males don't know how to come out. We just want to stay hidden because, you know, we're supposed to be, you know, we're men. We're supposed to be strong. We're supposed to take it as a man and deal with it. And, you know, and feel sorry for the women and have this awe about our children and awe about the female. So it's a very delicate, you know, my grandmother felt surprised that I'd bring something up like that. So, you know, it still makes me wonder. I can move forward, but will I ever forget what has happened? No, I will never forget what has happened. I can turn to God as much as I want to and go back and, you know, read scriptures from Jeremiah or Proverbs, you know. I mean, one of my strengths is knowledge and wisdom. But, you know, to have the knowledge as a child to know, okay, my parents don't want to have anything to do with me. Why? Your parents are supposed to love you and raise you as good children, good beings, and hopefully to get a job, a really good career job like my own parents did. They had good government jobs, but they threw it in.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Angie, Annie, was there any other, like, before it all came out onto the table, was there some kind of a hint of all this being released?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand that question.
What I'm saying, was there some, when all this happened with you, was there some kind of a hint or dinner bells ringing that, you know, someone are bringing this to you, or you had some idea, or someone else knew that there was something was going on but couldn't put their finger on it?
Well, I'm pretty sure my mom knew, and I kind of wonder if my grandparents knew, because at different points they took my siblings away and brought them to their own homes.
Yes.
And that makes me think maybe they knew, but they never discussed it or anything.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to move on, Peter. You brought up a good point. Yeah. That's all right. That's good. You brought up a good point. Because so often, especially back then, now it's changing, but not fast enough for we survivors, believe me. But back then, things like that were not spoken about. And that's where that saying comes, you shove it under the rug. And Peter, like you had said, when you're a man, you have to man up and you know, you forget about it. Well, you don't forget about it. What you try to do is learn over the years how to live with it. And you do learn, you know, especially if you get help. If you go to a therapist and you get help, a psychiatrist and get help, you know, or maybe someone else, someone in the church like I did. I had good counselors there, good therapists there, and got help from them. And so I put it in a different place of my mind, Peter, okay? And now when I look at my past and I see it all, I can put it all out in front of me. And I don't even feel like I have no emotion towards it anymore. It happened, yes, and we'll never forget that. But I have moved on. And as you go along in your healing journey, you do learn how to do that. And that's a good thing. Let's bring on Bill, because he hasn't had anything to say here for a while. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, my thought about what you just said, Carol, to Peter is that, you know, it's going to take some time for this to occur, but one of the big ways that it can be affected is for wondering about the wrong people and start talking to and caring about the right people. The wrong people are going to be your family members, for example, for a lot of people. Especially if you were abused in your family, even if you weren't, they may not understand it because they didn't see it, they don't believe it, you know, stuff like that. So I stopped trying to convince my family about, you know, whatever I had experienced until I got into recovery. And I started explaining it to people that were in recovery, and they all understood. So it's like 180 degrees difference to get the support of people who have been there themselves and understand it and don't put you down and don't say, get over it. You know, they don't say,
well, forget about it then, don't think about it. That's not going to help, as Carol said. You will never lose the story of your youth, but you don't have to dwell on it, and you don't ever have to live it again. That's optional, because you can choose to live in the moment. And when these thoughts start to come up, you know, get on the phone, call a survivor, get to a group, call one of these meetings that we have three times a week, or the radio show we have five times a week. There's a myriad of things we can do, and do get, you know, good feedback from professionals if you can take advantage of that through therapists and counselors and so forth. But, you know, as long as I stayed thinking about it, thinking about it, thinking about it, I was stuck in it. So I had to find ways, I guess I'm saying, to not deny it, but not hang out in it anymore, not be in the problem, but try to be in the solution. I guess that's the easiest way to say it. And, of course, I heard Peter's share the other night, and Annie, you're doing a terrific job on yours. You know, you're offering your story to the newcomer, who is even worse off than we are, believe it or not. They don't know, for example, that you can talk about this stuff. And you two are showing them that maybe someday they can talk about their stuff too. And, of course, we encourage that. So I want to thank you both, and Carol and Pamela, for being on the show tonight. And thank you for including me, Carol.
No, of course, of course. Now, you know, Peter, as time goes by, the more you tell your story, okay, you're going to, these people who injured you, all right, you're not going to forgive or forget or whatever. You know, some people don't forgive. I don't forgive because they knew what they were doing, but that's just me, okay? You're always going to remember it, but it's going to fade. It's going to fade because you're going to learn how to live your life today and look forward. And it does take time. Some people need more time than others, but you'll find different interests. And remember, they were the ones who were the abusers, so they're the ones that were wrong, okay? It wasn't you. It was them, okay? Let's get back to the story here because already it's, I don't know, my clock says 9:03, but I think it's a little bit off. I want to get into your book, too. You have The Ugliest Word. This is Today I Have No Shame. My book is a non-graphic novel entitled The Ugliest Word. Tell us a little something about your book.
Well, I started this book the first time anybody ever told me they had been abused. I wrote a poem, and I gave it to that person. That was my first being able to put something down on paper about it. Then from there, it went into a little short story about what it was like to be a kid. And then it turned into a play. I wrote a play about being an adult and looking back on the abuse. And I published that play all by myself on Amazon on CreateSpace. And then I was working with a man, I'm a ghostwriter, I was working with a man who's a producer of movies, and I gave him my play to read, and he read it, and he said, let's make the movie. But he said, you have to rewrite it. You have to write it about the childhood. So I rewrote it, and I gave it to him, and he said, oh, I couldn't possibly do this movie. It was too much for him. And from there, it turned into a novel. I've always wanted to write a novel. It was just coincidence that I ended up with a play and a screenplay instead. But I did it the opposite way. Most people write books first and then the movie. I wrote the movie first and then the book.
Well, maybe someday it will be a movie. I had a similar experience because with the first publishing company that I was with my book, they wanted me to make a trailer. Of course, everyone knows what a trailer is. It shows a little parts of your of the movie and of the story. And I had to give them quite a bit of money to do that, by the way. So anyway, I gave them the money. And after seeing it, now I never saw that trailer, but it came back through their legal department that my book was so volatile that they didn't want to handle that type. So when you said that, Well, you just said that. Oh, no, we could never do that. Well, this company couldn't do it either. And they did give me my money back. But, you know, you see, yeah, but today, okay, child abuse is something that's being spoken about a lot more today than it was 10 years ago when I wrote my book. And actually, it was 11 years ago now, just about. But anyway, the point is, I have no desire to write another book at this point in my life, except maybe about haunted houses, because I'm quite sure I lived in one. But anyway, that's another story. That's funny. But the point is, child abuse is out there, okay? People are looking at it, but they're not yet doing, you know, what we'd like them to do. They're not looking at it in a way. We have too many roadblocks yet, whether it be legal or whether it be even through the justice system or whatever, and through people, society itself. Now, they've come a long ways from, you know, when we were children. We don't sweep it under the rug anymore. But on the other hand, we need people to become more proactive and to care more. And if they see something, for God's sake, of course, you know, to say something. I see something else here, too, which I happen to have. And boy, am I in pain tonight. It says, I see a therapist, a psychiatric and medical doctor for fibromyalgia related to my sexual abuse. Fibromyalgia, you want to talk a little bit about that? Because people ask me all the time about fibromyalgia. What have you been told from the professional people about fibromyalgia?
Well, when I first came down with it, it's about 20 years now, that what they were teaching in medical school was that fibromyalgia was imaginary. There was nothing wrong with you. And that's what the doctors said. And I went through all kinds of tests, like the nervous system and muscle system. They never found anything. But I suffered from it for 20 years. I have to say that in the last maybe 5 or 6 years, I have been so much better. It really can get better. And I think it has to do with my healing. I really believe that because I hear so many people who have fibromyalgia on these phone calls for survivors, I really believe it's the survivor disease. I think it's caused by abuse. I think it messes with our brains, and then our brains mess with our hormones. I don't know what all. I'm not a doctor. But I really believe that child abuse causes it.
I think so, too. And the reason why, and I'll tell you why, and I think this is good for people to hear, I was searching around. I do this at times, you know, at different articles and medical articles and so forth. And they had a video on of two doctors. Now, one doctor has fibromyalgia, and the other doctor didn't. These are two men. And so they were doing studies on fibromyalgia, and the one that had it suffers horribly from it all the time, from fibromyalgia. He's in constant chronic pain. Now, it didn't go into too many details, but it was like suggesting that he had come from a very dysfunctional family background, but it didn't say exactly what. So they were swearing that and they weren't trying to sell medicine or anything for it, okay? They were just plain talking about fibromyalgia. So it definitely does exist. And the doctor that has it, when he has fibromyalgia, he just simply, you know, takes NSAIDs and, you know, does exercises. Certain exercises seem to help in certain muscles, because a lot of times our muscles ache and all this other stuff. I don't have to tell you. And, you know, it can become debilitating, but he too, just by the little bit that he did share about this dysfunctional home that he came from, I think probably that he, too, was abused, although he didn't actually say abuse. It said dysfunctional homes. So, you know, I think that it does do in fact, they spoke about a chemical disorder in the brain that children, and we know this for a fact, studies have been done other than theirs. When children are abused, whether it be sexual, physical, mental, emotional, neglect, or all of them, it doesn't matter which, The chemicals in our brains actually change. Our brain structure changes. Now, this we do know. So maybe, you know, since so many people who have been abused, who do suffer from fibromyalgia, that's what's happening, and that's where it's coming from. I wish they'd do more research and find out for sure. Do you take medication for your fibromyalgia?
I do. I take, I always forget how you're supposed to say it, psych medicines, I think that's how you say it, for depression and OCD and that kind of thing. And I totally believe that is what has helped me, because two times I've tried to go off medication, and both times I was attacked by terrible fibromyalgia. So by taking away those meds, I got really sick. So that's why I believe they're helping me.
Now you see,
but
those
I don't
doctors,
take pain medication.
Right. Now the opioids and all that. Those doctors, now, see, they didn't say anything about, you know, taking medication. This is, I'm curious. This is why I'm asking you this. Because we who suffer from it, and there's many of us that do, do want relief, for God's sake. So if you are you taking the psychotropic type of drugs? Is this what you're saying for the mental and whatever?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
That's what I kind of figured. Okay, so this doctor doesn't take medication, and that, I suppose that's why he is in chronic pain every single day. So there you go, bingo. We should write them and tell them. And then and then the next time they go talk about my fibromyalgia, they'll have more answers. I think too that it's related, absolutely. Yeah. So let's go back to the panel. We have one last time that we can do that. And Pamela, is there something that you'd like to you know, to say or to ask?
Annie, you wrote your book, and it's called The Ugliest Word, right?
Yes.
I'm going to make a guess at that word.
Yes,
would
please make
be,
a guess at the word.
Would it be I don't know. I can't figure it out.
Shall I tell you?
Yeah.
In my mind, the ugliest word is incest.
Ah.
Why,
nobody ever
why
wants
do you,
to say that.
Why do you think it's the ugliest word?
Because nobody will say it. Even when they're talking about child abuse, I've noticed anyway, people don't say incest. They say child assault, sexual assault, that kind of thing. But the word incest is the big taboo. But the taboo isn't in committing it. The taboo is in talking about it, that we've been victims and this is going on and it needs to stop.
So that's very interesting. Have you done any research about what keeps people locked away from being able to discuss incest?
Not really, no. I don't do research.
Oh, okay.
You know, I think I have to agree with her on this, because to me, all right, I was sexually abused, I was kidnapped, raped, all kinds of stuff, and the last rape that I had gotten pregnant too, okay? I was 17 years old and when I was raped the last time, and I lost my baby. I was like 3 months along, and I didn't dare tell my mother, okay? Oh, no, no, no. Now, that was by a stranger. But inside of my family, to me, the ugliest thing, I'm going to use that word, that happened with all the sexual abuses that I happened to go through, and many of us go through, is incest. And I think the reason for it, if I were to say on the psychological level, the reason that I would use for it is because the family is where love is supposed to be. This is where home is. Home is supposed to be, they're showing it on TV now because of the COVID, it's kind of funny, but home is the place to go to. Home is the place where you get your love. Home is the place where you're supposed to be accepted. Home is the place where you are to be, gently directed. Home is the place where you learn boundaries. Home is the place where all of the good things happen in our lives, all the holidays and all the fun that we have is home. So if we look at these things, which home is supposed to represent, to me, the incest that I went through with my brother and with my uncle, to me, that was the ugliest word. I agree. Yeah.
Okay, so last night when we were on the show, Tammy was the host, and she kept saying whenever she brought up about what happened to her, her mother's eyes would glaze over, and she'd go into it in kind of like a trance and turn her head, and it was like there's some kind of psychological shutdown of people who cannot handle, like you said, Annie, I think you said that somebody couldn't handle hearing it. I don't remember who it was, but it's kind of like throwing darts at their psyche. Okay, when you bring that word up, I can't think of any other way to put it. I don't have words to say what I'm trying to say, but it's some kind of psychological, banter for them. They're just not psychologically equipped to hear that word for some reason.
Mm-hmm. They call those dead eyes. Okay. I just want you to know that. And that's a nasty way of putting it, but that's what they are. They're dead eyes. They don't have any emotion. You see no emotion in those eyes or any. They look like dead eyes. Because what they've done is they have taken everything that they're seeing before them and they're just pushing it so far away that it actually, you get a glaze on your eyes and they call them dead eyes. So that's where that came from.
So do you think that word is like a dart to people?
Dart?
Yeah, that it's like you're throwing a dart into their forehead. I mean, it's like you're just shooting something at them, It's like they can't handle it.
That's right. And so therefore the mind takes over. And you know how we put up blocks, we put up walls, and those walls can represent anything. I don't want to see this. I don't want to feel it. I don't want to see the ugliness of it. I can't handle it. So, surely it's going to affect the expression of the eyes, and that's why they call them dead eyes.
But the point is not really the eyes that I'm trying to make. It's like, we're only seeing from our side saying, well, why can't they handle the word incest? Well, they can't. I mean, it's just something they can't wrap their minds around. They don't want
to. No, they can't. They can't.
Right.
Incest is considered a dirty word. It's like, it's bad enough when someone gets sexually abused. People are starting to be able to say at least that. When they're sexually abused. In fact, Annie had said that. But when you say the word incest, that's like a stigma. Okay, and it affects the person, and I know this very well from what I've felt. It affects the person even more than being sexually abused than, say, by a stranger. That's an unfortunate thing to happen. That's how the mind looks at it. But when a family member or a couple family members are sexually abusing you, that's even too much for me to handle even today. Because I look at it, and to me, it is the ugliest word.
Okay. Carol, I just looked up the word stigma, and it means a mark of disgrace associated with a particular circumstance, quality, or person. It's a mark of disgrace. A mark of disgrace.
Right. It's shame, too. Now, you just said it that way. Yeah, I that's when I felt shame. That's right. That's when I felt shame.
Yeah. Because you were stigmatized.
And it is ugly. Yeah.
Right.
I do. Well, Annie, how do you feel about that?
I think that the stigma is part of what made me so afraid and so ashamed that even though it's not my fault, I still feel that weird little thing like, oh, my God, I'm a person that incest happened to. And I just, you know, sometimes you feel like you're a big swollen thumb walking around that everybody can see that happened to you. Yeah.
That's a great way to put it.
But it's a terrible feeling. Yeah.
Oh, I said that was a great way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like everybody knows.
Yeah. But now everybody does know because I speak about it openly and I am not ashamed anymore.
Good for you. Good for you. Because you shouldn't be ashamed. I mean, we didn't do it, for God's sake. We're the ones that it happened to. Okay? And Peter, for God's sake, what were the ages that you were talking about that you had to, you know, have sex with your sister? You were 8 and she was 5. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
All right. Now, do you think, you know, putting everything aside, that an 8-year-old boy or girl is responsible for their actions when they have a monster father or cousin or uncle standing over them and telling them, you know, that this is what you have to do or you're going to suffer the consequences? That's my cat, sorry.
Are you asking that question to me?
Yes, honey, I am. I'm asking you that question. You were 8 years old. I want you to think back to when you were 8 years old. An 8-year-old is a child. And, you know, for you to carry that with you all these many years that you've spoken about, it was not your fault. This is why we keep telling you this. It is not your fault. You were an 8-year-old child. Your abuse was there, too. You were being abused by making you perform those actions on your sister, who was only 5.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
I had quite the stigma. I mean, even at the time, in 1990, almost 31 years ago when I was diagnosed with the HIV virus, and it's when you get told something, it's very stigmatizing. I mean, and it's still going, you know, transgenders and all the sexual orientation that's out there that people have been stigmatizing, you know, each year on World AIDS Day, you know, it's pretty much our number one topic is stigma. And when it comes to something like this, and I do believe that when I mentioned this some time ago, is that I tried to get to a retreat program. I told them truthfully everything of detail because their retreat program was for those who've been sexually abused. And it was my way in for healing. But they turned me down.
Good.
They turned me down. It's bad because they turned me down because I had sexual involvement with my sister, even though it wasn't my fault.
You just said it. You just said it, Peter. I have to end the show. I have to end the show, honey. Look what time it is. Yeah. So, but I just wanted to relay that to you. You see, we understand where you're coming from. And there's a lot of people out there that are understanding where you're coming from. But when you're 8 and 5, it is never your fault, okay? And even if you were 15 and 12 or something, and someone's holding a gun to your head, it wouldn't be that person's fault either. It was not your fault. We had a very good show tonight. I'm going to bring Bill back on. He is on. And we're going to end the show. And we have about 4 minutes left. Bill, do you want to say something, or shall I have Annie, our guest, say the last words?
Well, I just want to thank everybody who was on the show tonight for coming on, and I will be happy to reserve the time for Annie. But I do want to say that this is why I mentioned earlier that, you know, we get it. We, meaning survivors, get it, whereas non-survivors and family members and people that just don't, you know, are not survivors, don't get it. So they're not the ones you appeal to. You appeal to us. Like Carol just said, we understand. Many of us have gone through similar experiences. Annie, thank you so much for being with us. I'll give you the rest of the time. And Carol, thank you for running a good show.
Oh, you're welcome. Go ahead, Annie. At the end, we always like our guests to say a few words, give people hope. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I'll say that the thing that helped me most of all in my healing was talking to other survivors. And so that's what I recommend. There's a lot of, like, Zoom groups and chat groups and this and that for survivors. I totally recommend that people do that because it makes you realize it's not your fault. It happened to those other people, too, and it's not their fault either.
Okay.
And that's all I want to say. Thank you.
Well, that was funny. And I want to thank you so much for coming on. You know, you are a family member now. And you can come on any time you want, Monday through Friday. And if you look at the front of the website, NASCA, NASCA.org, NASCA.org, you'll see Monday through Friday the shows that we offer. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, we have our guests on like you are tonight. And then on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have other people that come on who are survivor professionals who it's question and answer night. People can call in and ask any question they want, whatever's on their mind, okay? And so it's a topic type of, shows. So anyway, please feel free to do that. And you were a wonderful guest. You told your story quite well. You did. And you gave all of us something to think about. And I agree with your title here, The Ugliest Word. Yes, I do. And I'll be looking for that book, okay?
Okay.
And so with that, I'm going to end the show. And I thank everyone that came on tonight. And I hope the people out there who are listening, I hope that you learned something. Because you can always learn something when you listen to NASCA. And remember, you're not alone. And the reason why I'm so tired is because I'm the night owl. And if you have a problem, you can call me because I stay up almost all night, okay? And I'm on the contact list. There you go. And there's a lot of people on that contact list. So you're never alone, okay? Good night. God bless. And we'll see you on Monday. Have a safe weekend. Good night now.
Bye.
Good night.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Mm-hmm.